Chapter 7. Julia Sorensen found the crossroads easily enough, which was not surprising, because her GPS showed it to be the only cartographical singularity for miles around. She made the right turn, as instructed, and she drove west 100 yards toward a pool of light, and she saw a concrete bunker with a sheriff's car and a deputy's cruiser parked right next to it. The crime scene, exactly as described. She understood the cars better than the bunker. The cars were Crown Vics like her own, but painted up in county colors and fitted with push bars front and rear and light bars on their roofs. The bunker was harder to explain. It was rectangular, maybe 20 feet long and 15 feet deep and 10 feet tall. It had a flat concrete roof and no windows. Its door was metal, bowed and scuffed and dented. The whole structure looked old and tired and settled. The concrete itself was worn by wind and weather, spalled and pitted, hollowed out here and there into fist-sized holes. Brown flinty stones had been exposed, some of them smooth, some of them split and shattered. She parked behind the deputy's car and climbed out. She was a tall woman, clearly Scandinavian, handsome rather than pretty, with long ash-blonde hair, most of which color was natural. She was wearing black pants and a black jacket with a blue shirt under it. She had solid black shoes on her feet, and she had a black pear-shaped shoulder bag which carried all her stuff except her gun, which was in a holster on her left hip, and her ID wallet, which was in her pocket. She took out the wallet and flipped it open and walked towards the sheriff. She judged him to be about 20 years older than she was. He was very solid, but not tall, like 3/4 of a football player. Not bad for an old guy. He was wearing a winter jacket over his uniform shirt. No gloves, even though the night was cold. They shook hands and stood quiet for a second, facing the concrete bunker, as if wondering where to start.
"First question," Sorensen said. "What is this place?"
Goodman said, "It's an old pumping station. It brought water up from the aquifer."
"Abandoned now?"
Goodman nodded. "The water table fell. We had to dig a deeper hole. The new pump is about a mile from here."
"Is the dead guy still in there?"
Goodman nodded again. "We waited for you."
"Who's been in there so far?"
"Just me and the doctor."
"There's a lot of blood."
"Yeah," Goodman said, "there is."
"Did you step in it?"
"We had to. We had to make sure the guy was dead."
"What did you touch?"
"Just his wrist and his neck, looking for a pulse." Sorensen squatted down and opened up her pear-shaped shoulder bag. She took out plastic booties to cover her shoes and latex gloves to cover her hands and a camera. She put one foot in a sticky puddle and opened the bunker's door. One hinge squealed and one hinge moaned. The two sounds together made a kind of banshee wail. She put the other foot in the puddle. "There's a light inside," Goodman said. She found the switch. It operated a caged bulb on the ceiling. Old cage, old bulb. Maybe 200 watts. Clear glass. It gave a bright, harsh, shadowless light. She saw the stumps of two fat old pipes coming up through the floor, maybe 10 feet apart. Both pipes were about a foot wide, and both of them had once been painted smooth institutional green, but they were now chipped and scaly with rust. Both of them were open at the top, and both of them terminated with wide flanges, where bolted joints had once been made. A municipal system, long disassembled. Sorensen guessed for many years groundwater had come up through one pipe and had been boosted onward through the other, horizontal and underground, to a water tower somewhere close by. But then one day the pumps had started sucking on dry rock honeycombs, and it had been time for a new hole. Irrigation, population, and indoor plumbing. Sorensen had read her briefing papers. 2.5 trillion gallons of groundwater a year, more than anywhere except Texas and California. She moved on. Apart from the water pipes, there was old grit on the floor, and a heavy-duty electrical panel on one wall, several generations old, and a faded diagram on another wall showing the nature and purpose of the hydraulic equipment that had once connected one green stump to the other. And that was it, in terms of permanent infrastructure. The non-permanent infrastructure was the dead guy, and his blood. He was on his back, with his elbows and knees bent like a cartoon sketch of a man dancing an old-fashioned number. His face was covered in blood, and his midsection was covered in blood, and he was lying in a lake of blood. He was maybe 40 years old, although it was hard to judge. He was wearing a green winter coat, cotton canvas padded and insulated with something. Not old, but not new either. The coat was not zipped or buttoned. It was open, over a gray sweater and a cream-checked shirt. Both sweater and shirt looked worn and dirty. Both sweater and shirt had been tugged out of the guy's waistband, and then they had been pulled up past his rib cage. He had two knife wounds. The first was a lateral slash across his forehead, an inch above his eyes. The second was a ragged stab wound in the right side of his midsection, about level with his navel. Most of the blood had come from the second wound. It had welled out. The guy's navel looked like a thimbleful of drying paint. Sorensen said,
"How do you see it, Sheriff?"
From outside the door, Goodman said, "They nicked him in the forehead to blind him. A sheet of blood came down in his eyes. That's an old knife-fighting trick, which is why I thought of them as professionals. And from that point on, it was easy. They pulled up his shirt and stuck the knife up under his ribs and jerked it around, but not quite enough. It took him a few minutes to die." Sorensen nodded to herself. Hence all the blood. The guy's heart had kept on pumping, valiantly but fruitlessly. She asked,
"Do you know who he is?"
"Never saw him before."
"Why'd they pull up his shirt?"
"Because they're professionals. They didn't want the blade to snag."
"I agree," Sorensen said. "It must have been a long knife, don't you think? To get up into his thorax from there?"
8 or 9 inches, maybe."
"Did the eyewitness see a knife?"
"He didn't say so, but you can ask him yourself. He's waiting in the deputy's car, keeping warm." Sorensen asked,
"Why didn't they use a gun? A Silence 22 would be more typical if this is a professional hit."
"Still loud in an enclosed space."
"Pretty far from anywhere."
"Then I don't know why they didn't," Goodman said. Sorensen used her camera and took photographs, zooming out wide for context, zooming in tight for details. She asked,
"Do you mind if I disturb the body? I want to check for ID."
Goodman said, "It's your case."
"Is it?"
"The perps are out of the state by now."
"They are if they went east."
"And if they went west, it's only a matter of time. They got through the roadblocks, apparently." Sorensen said nothing. "They switched to another car," Goodman said.
"Or cars," Sorensen said. "They might have split up and traveled separately."
Goodman thought about the empty spaces either side of the parked Mazda. Thought about his final APB. Any two men in any kind of vehicle. He said, "I didn't consider that possibility. I guess I screwed up." Sorensen didn't reassure him. She just picked her way around the blood and squatted down in the driest patch she could find. She put her left hand out behind her for balance and used her right hand on the corpse. She pressed and patted and searched. There was nothing in the shirt pocket, nothing in the coat, inside or out. Her gloved fingers turned red with rubbery smears. She tried the pants pockets. Nothing there. She called,
"Sheriff, you're gonna have to help me here."
Goodman picked his way inside on tiptoe, using long sideways steps like he was on a ledge 1,000 feet up. Sorensen said,
"Put your finger in his belt loop. Roll him over. I need to check his back pockets."
Goodman squatted opposite her, arm's length from the body, and hooked a finger in a belt loop. He turned his face away and hauled. The dead guy came up on his hip. Blood squelched and dripped, but slowly, because it was drying and mixing with the grit on the floor to make a paste. Sorensen's gloved hand darted in like a pickpocket, and she poked and prodded and patted. Nothing there.
"No ID," she said. "So as of right now, we have ourselves an unidentified victim. Ain't life grand?"
Goodman let the guy roll back, flat on the floor.